All right, welcome to another episode of Classical Pairings. I'm sitting here in the oldest operating brewery in Indiana at the Broad Ripple Brew Pub. It's one of my favorite spots as well. We've got two brewers here and a composer, so let's go ahead and go around the table and y'all can just introduce yourselves.
Billy's not a brewer.
I am Billy Hannon. I am the GM here, technically not a brewer. Everything about brewing, I learned through osmosis, which is quite a lot, actually, that you can learn after 24 years.
I'm Jonathan Mullins. I am the brewer here at Broad Ripple Brew Pub. I handle everything day-to-day in the brewery from making wort that then goes on yeast, and then I let the yeast do all the work and the heavy lifting because that's how it should be done. So I take care of everything in between with cleaning and everything else. So like every brewer out there, my job is 90% janitorial, 5% maintenance, and 5% actually making wort. So that's okay. That's it.
All right.
There you go.
And I'm Frank Felice. I'm a composer who teaches at Butler University and is also a home brewer. So everything that John said, I would echo in spades. It's all about sanitation. So,
all about sanitation. Okay.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been here since the beginning at the brew pub, or when did
not
you
even close
come on?
For me? Billy's okay. Been here a lot longer.
Yeah, I've been here since '95, so 24 years. I missed the first 5 years, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. As time goes on, I do wish I was there at the very beginning, but. Again, everything that happened, I have actually, discovered through stories and listening. And I like to think that, other than John Hill himself, I know as much about the history of the place as anybody does.
Yeah.
I've only been here for 5 years now. I actually, when we turned 29, I turned 5 years 3 days after that, and 3 days before, or 2 days before that, I was married for 14 years. So it's a big anniversary week for me. It's amazing I stay sober the whole week, but I do, because there's a lot of important work to do to get ready for the anniversaries. Yeah.
Start tying into music and stuff here in a minute, but there are some things that you guys do at the Broad Ripple Brew Pub that's a little bit unique. In Indianapolis, right, with sort of a focus on certain types of beers and certain types of methods.
Yes.
Could you describe those just a little bit?
So almost everything we do is kind of cask condition, which means we kind of capture as much natural CO2 as possible. We don't put sugar back on the beers like they do in England.
Okay.
But we, also try to capture as much of that, which gives you a smoother head. There's a party going on in the other room. Guys, you guys want to move over there? You got time. past that, we try to stick to a lot of traditional English ales. Everything that we do has the balance of how the English do beers. Every once in a while, I get a little wonky, but not too often. Even when I have a crazy idea, I bring it back to focus a balance. So if it's got a fruit in it, you're always still going to taste the beer that's in the fruit. The hopsicle is a big, beefy beer, but it's got a nice hop presence to it. And then it fades into
balanced.
The sweet. Yeah, it's balanced.
It's got it fades a good into the malt balance
right.
to it.
And the malt that we use really holds up well to the hops. The ESB is, I call it the porridge of beer, which is the other beer that you guys have sitting here. And it is not too hoppy, not too malty. I always tell everybody it's just balanced. Right. Somebody comes in, that's usually the first beer I direct them to if they've never been here before.
Yeah. It was the first beer I ever had at the brew pub back in 91.
It's one
when
of
I was
my
here
first.
As a student.
It is, and not too many places do brew ESBs.
We especially like year think, round.
Yeah, and we like to think ours, is still as good as anyone else's, if not better. Toot our own horn, but it really is. It's kind of based on Fuller's originally. London ESB, we've maintained it over the years. I know that Jonathan will tell you it takes a lot of tweaking to keep it right every time, but we think it's pretty consistent for the most part,
especially on a 29-year-old brewery system.
Yes,
no bells and whistles.
How has that changed? Because I know in the world of homebrew, lots of new bells and whistles have been coming out for the last 20 years what I've been doing homebrew. And so every time I walk into Great Fermentations, they're saying, hey, maybe you should try this gadget or this gadget or this gadget. And then going back and looking at the brewing systems that small and medium large brewers are doing now all over the country, that seems to have also changed in your world too.
Quite a bit, if not more so. And it's really, it comes down to, you know, the amount of money that somebody has to spend on a system, what they're really looking to get out of it, how much control, because it's a harder fight for me to keep consistency across the board from beer to beer, because something will break down. I don't get an alarm at home to shut everything down or come in and fix it. I have to show up the next day and go, oh, well, that happened. Okay. How am I going to fix this? What do I? What am I going to have to end up dumping? What is, you know, what am I going to have to tweak to make this work? Turning it into something else.
That, right.
You know, because sometimes it's a good beer, but, you know, the yeast got a little too hot, so it's a little too fruity or a little too something.
I hate to ask this question, but have you guys ever had a beer goes so south that it just became malt vinegar that you sold on the side somewhere? Or?
So technically, we have some sitting out in the garage right now that I'm planning on actually turning into malt vinegar.
And then
we will have it as a vinegar here. I'm just not lazy, but just haven't had time
to do it.
So it's funny because it's only going to take me 15 minutes to make, but it's getting in the mindset of going out to the garage and getting what I need out of the vessel that it's in and heating it up to kill off all the bugs so that the vinegar doesn't continue to make itself. And then now I have vinegar containers that I can continuously make vinegar in because the mother's always going to be there.
Good.
So right now we have ESB that was barrel aged that went a little south in that direction. So I've got that. But typically in the tanks that we have, you'll never see that.
Right.
The beer hardly sees the light of day. There's a sight glass on both ends from tank to tank, but that's it. Past that, it doesn't see daylight. Once it hits the a tank, it's as pure as my cleanliness, you know, is. And that regiment's pretty hardcore. You can ask Billy. There's days where I'm like, well, I got to clean this tank again or whatever. Yeah. He understands that,
well,
too.
Yeah, you know, contamination is always a problem if you're not very, very clean.
So, Frank, so you're a composer, but also let's talk homebrewing first. We'll get to music in a minute, even though this is a music podcast. But
pardon me, I was sipping.
I don't know, you're just fine. How long have you been doing homebrewing?
Just a little over 20 years. When I was living in Oregon and when I was in school in Minnesota, I knew people who did homebrewing, and so participated in very simple tasks that they would have me do, and I just, because I'm also somebody who cooks, you know, following recipes and all that kind of stuff was very much a part of what my life was. And I was like, I really want to do this because I loved the full panoply and flavor of beer rather than just American lager. And so from the moment I knew about craft brews, I was always seeking them out wherever I lived. And when I got here, I found out from, you know, may have even been you, that, you know, there was a woman here in town who had a brewery supply shop. And the moment, you know, I told this to my wife, who is a goddess, bought me my first home brew supply kit. And so I had to go get either a funnel.
And she's a mezzo-soprano, right?
Mezzo-soprano.
Oh, there you go. All right.
But she, but she, I had to go get a, like, some either cleaning gear or a funnel or something. And so I met Anita Johnson, and she and I hit it off. And through that friendship and the fact that it was, you know, up in 86 and then for a while across the street from here at the brew
pub. For about 2 years, Till they got too big, and then unfortunately they couldn't expand there, which it'd be nice if they were still there, but, you know.
Well, then they went out there, and then they opened one in Avon for a while. Now that one's closed, and they've pushed everything back to that. I think it just was too much.
I've been a home brewer for all that time and would do typically two or three beers a year. I've slowed down. Now it's about one just because I'm so busy doing compositional things.
So do you see a comparison between the home brewing and the composition? Are they completely separate activities in your mind? Or they
no, it's kind of it's creative things, but in different working out methods. I spend a lot of time thinking about whatever pieces I'm going to be writing, and so I do a lot of planning. And it's very similar to say, if this is the style of beer that I want to do, first of all, what are the characteristics of that style? Go drink four or five of those, you know, out in the world and say, mm-hmm. hey, I like this person's versus this person's. Then go try and find a recipe either online or, you know, formulate one from mm-hmm. reading a number of homebrew books. And then the day of, it's clean the kitchen 15 times and then soak everything.
That's way more hardcore than I was as a homebrewer.
Well, I've had a couple of mine go south and become malt vinegar. And after that, it's like,
you don't enough. Yeah.
But that's interesting. I know your music. I know that your scores are meticulous. And so I think that there's something about your eye for detail that maybe works really well with both of these. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that that's a fair comparison. You know, you have to be prepared. You have to go in and get the best ingredients you possibly can. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing in the middle of something, you know, where maybe you added these hops at the wrong time or somehow or another there's a hop shortage and so you can't brew the beer you exactly wanted to. So what kind of substitution can you do for that? Mm. I remember doing an all-grain brewing one day, and the guy that I was brewing with hadn't set his yeast out to, you know, get ready to go. Mm-hmm. It was in a glass jar that was sealed, mm-hmm. and he put it in the garage. It warmed up too quickly and blew up. So here we were with, you know, the grains, you know, soaking, you know, to get ready to be wort, and we had no yeast, and so he had to, you know, make a special call to Anita because it was closed that day and say, please, what can you do? No. I think she actually sent the guy to a brewery just to get some yeast from somebody there.
Maybe. Yeah. So are there similar issues that come up in composing?
Oh, yeah. Or you get stuck, or this is an idea that didn't work. You know, how do you salvage it? Mm-hmm. You know, he's talking about salvaging this ESB that works out.
Stuck mashes.
Yeah. How do you fix it?
It's really interesting thinking about this. It sounds like the similarity is a sort of like just creative problem solving, basically. Mm-hmm. And knowing an end product, but then being able to make accommodations as you go. I don't know. What do you think in the brewing world?
Well, and I don't know what it is like in the composing world, because us in the brewing world, especially on the homebrew scale, we're very, you know, open to ideas from others. We will talk with one another. I mean, there's a homebrew conference and there's a professional brewers conference. And that's where a lot of times people will come back with, oh, I didn't think about that. Or, hey, I've been having this issue. How do I work through it? You know, and sometimes it's, I know enough local people where I can go and talk to, and, you know, they're not necessarily brewers, but they work for labs of another brewery, and I can go and talk to them and get advice or, you know, pay for their time or whatever it is. And it's, for us, I'm more willing to do that than have to spend $10,000 on a nice lab so that not only we would have to hire somebody to run that lab, which we don't have a need for because we're small and we don't brew five times a week. We brew a couple times a week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, all we got to worry about is the week to week and the cleaning and everything else in between. And my focus can then shift a little quicker to that. So I think it's very open in the realm of, have you tried this? As opposed to, oh, I can't give you that information. It's proprietary. Mm-hmm. Now, there might be jokes every once in a while, and there are some breweries that are very staunch on, you know, proprietorship. You know, Coors will be one kind of thing. You know, but those are the bigger guys, and they have reason to be as shut down as they are. Yeah. But you're still able to walk through. Think about it. You're still able to walk through their facility and see their day-to-day operation. You're able to see their giant canning or bottling lines. You're able to see workers on the floor doing the day in and day out of what they do. And same with here. We've got the window in the brewery, and you can see, you know, me being as foolish as possible because it's normally how I treat the window if I'm in the right mood. Some days I'm just like, don't look at me. Stop looking at me. Please don't look at me. Yeah. I'm going to come around the other side and hurt you if you don't quit. I'm not actually that bad. But there are days where, you know, if I'm back there all day, I do. I want to be left alone. And if I'm up here, I'm a little more, you know, outgoing. Yeah. And I have those swings. So Yeah. Billy can definitely attest to that. He's probably heard the swear words all the way up in the office from the brewery.
The swearing is a part of composition
it has,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be home and all of a sudden something doesn't work and then, you know, the room is blue with profanity.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah.
I say red, but okay.
Yeah. No,
normally that's when I switch over to different music and try to focus a little harder. Yeah.
Well, you hear a crash because a bunch of kegs fell over and then followed by
or I threw one.
Obscenity.
It's not necessarily that one fell over. It's I threw one across the brewery. It could be either. That's all I'm saying. I'll be honest. Yeah.
So with the ties sort of to this traditional beer making style that you guys have here, do you still feel room for creativity and experimentation?
I made a hard seltzer, for Christ's sake. Yes. So yes. Okay.
What's in a hard seltzer? Tell me. Yeah.
What's in a hard seltzer?
Yeah.
It's sugar, water, and acid.
Okay.
Supplied onto yeast again. So I'm just making sugar, water, or wort.
Okay. Did you? Because the yeast is so much what makes beer taste the way it does. So, I mean, were you sitting one day and saying, "Well, I think I'm going to use a lager yeast on the seltzer this time"?
That would be a really good idea. However, I was fearful of how much pressure there would be to continuously make this. So far, there hasn't been that, but we keep hoping that we gravitate towards the White Claw of the world, if you will. Because, you know, we wouldn't
as
mind making
the Zima of the world.
It's a totally different thing.
Totally different.
Awesome.
Totally different. Tastes so much better than Zima, trust me. I have nightmares of Zima. Let's put it that way. Not of a different vein, but of the kind of similar string of things. I mean, it is a little more refined, I think, malt liquor than what Zima is. But we did ours. I decided to do a weird fruit, which may be why most people don't necessarily gravitate towards it. But I was like, well, I want to play with fun fruits and see what the flavors are of those fruits. And while I've done lingonberry before, and I did that in a kettle sour. So Berliner Weiss with lingonberry, essentially, is what it was. And it was a pretty big hit.
It was,
That one was called Bork, Bork, Bork.
And this one has its, you know, its place too, but obviously most people come in here, they're looking for a real beer. So in some ways, you're kind of oddly trying to get people who don't like beer to recognize that we have something that they can drink other than
and or just have beer. That option on the menu too. Yeah. That, you know, oh, well, they don't have White Claw, but they have their own seltzer.
You
let's give
own,
that a whirl.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and it's only 3.5%. And I think the next one I have is 5%, but it's got elderberry on it. So, like I said, I'm trying to keep with the otter ducks of, oh, nobody's making a seltzer with this or that.
Yeah,
and
I thought
that's
it was
what
a great
I'm trying
idea.
To. Yeah, you
I
know,
mean,
I'm
really,
trying
when
to.
When you said that, I thought, yeah. And then the other funny thing is that so many other breweries, they start off by saying, "Why do you do this? Why'd you make that?" But then they will drink it and think, "Well, it actually is really refreshing."
On top of having a lot of other brewers come and ask me how I made
and then
it.
How did you make it?
It's
it's
usually become the.
It's
you know,
nice
well,
to
what'd
be
you do?
The bandwagon
how'd you do it?
That
I'm
people
like,
are jumping
that's
on.
That's weird. Like, I got 10 breweries now asking me how to do this.
Yeah.
And I asked. We weren't the first one in the state to do it, but we were pretty damn close. I don't think I was far behind the idea after I found out that happened, but that was definitely the push for me to go and go, if it's already happening, I might as well jump on board and
why
do
not?
It.
Yeah.
And in the same fashion, I'm not going to make a hazy IPA. I just, that's a bandwagon I refuse to jump on.
Well, let me ask you a question as a follow-up to that, because one of the benefits of having been in the area for 20 years now is to see what you guys have done consistently and also then see what kinds of outside the box sorts of things. I'm sad I missed the seltzer because now I really want to taste
still
it.
On.
Oh, it's still
okay,
on.
Then
you
I'll,
got
I'll
it,
get
so.
One before I go.
Yeah.
But you guys have really in some ways, as you stated earlier in the podcast, have really stayed with, we're an English style pub. We do English style brews really, really good. And you do go outside of the box quite well. But you have not been like some of the other breweries in the area and indeed all over the United States, the ones that have jumped on the hops till you die.
Yeah,
you know. And what are the five taps? And you go, well, it's hoppy one, hoppy two, hoppy times 12, hoppy this. And then we have an ESB.
Yes.
And you go, well, that's also kind of a hoppy beer.
Yes.
And you guys have always had
The brown?
Where's the brown? The amber, where's the stouts and all those things? Uh-huh. So my question for you is this. When you do experiment, you tend to really keep a nice cap set towards tradition and then riff on that. And you do it so very, very well.
Yeah.
What's your jumping off point then?
It really depends. Sometimes it's a trend where I kind of want to play with the idea, but I don't really like the idea of, you know, how it can kind of just be a trend and I know it's going to go away. And sometimes I'm like going to be so far behind it by the time I am able to get it out.
Yeah.
So I have to keep these things in mind. So what I do is I'm like, well, I really like this style. So I did a Brute IPA.
I was going to say the Brute IPA.
That's probably about as crazy as I've done IPAs with.
Yeah.
We called it 10,000 Lumens, but it happened to be in honor of one of our manager's daughters who they were in a horrible car accident. And she ended up in the hospital. So we had a fundraising off of that beer.
Yeah, so all the
so I had process, purpose behind it, too, to help kind of, even though Brutes had been out for over a year, it was okay for me to do it that way.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to do it again because, damn it,
it was beer.
Because it was really
like
delicious.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I really hate myself, but this is good.
Yes.
Sometimes I do that. I'm like, I don't want to make a bad beer, but if I'm going to do it, I'm going to try to do it right. And that's the other thing, too, that kind of keeps me grounded is, you know, if I was going to do something crazy, one of the other collabs, we did a hazy IPA and trolled the Haze Boys. I'm sure they loved that, but it was crystal clear. But as juicy.
You made ironic beer.
Yeah.
Yes. We do that a lot.
Good.
Yes.
Well, you guys have always had such a great sense of humor in terms of the names of the beers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The quality has always been high. So
Other than the IPA, I like to say to people, we'll actually say, well, what's your IPA called? And we said it doesn't have a name because when we brewed it, nobody was brewing an IPA. It was the only IPA in the state. So
I will admit I made it a little more American since I've been here. But
a little bit, there's a little dry hopping in there. But I mean, nothing too crazy.
No.
I mean, it's still the same basic beer. But I mean, so when it comes to naming beers, when you're brewing like, 50 different beers a year, you know, I mean, a lot of times yours are named after songs that you listen to on the radio.
Yeah, actually, that's very true. There is a lot of that. I have Silent Lucidity. It's a Queensrÿche song, and it's a Bohemian Pilsner. So
it's probably an 11-8, like the opening. So.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was a music nerd joke.
It was.
So. I get it. Don't worry. Yeah,
people will sing a bard a song while they're ordering it. Yeah. But yeah, we had my own, there you go. See, I don't come up with names too often, but one I did is we made a version of the old Peculiar. This was before Jonathan. And so I thought the good name for it would be John Hill's Old and Peculiar. And, I think that's an example of some humor here.
Yeah.
He is old and peculiar, but that's okay.
It's a joy to open up the menu, though, and see these names that you guys have come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
think that your customers, smile as much at that as, saying, I want to try this beer now after I've read it.
Yeah. You can always tell when a beer name's better than the beer, too.
Yeah.
Somehow. Yeah. That's also helpful.
That happens with the band sometimes.
Yes.
Oh, they wasted that band name.
Yeah.
I wish they were better.
Only someone else could have used it.
Well, it's funny making the Silent Lucidity because you can always tell who the Queensrÿche fans are out there when I do sell it out of house.
Yeah. Yes.
That's always fun. Because and taking it to festivals, you get to see
they do.
I got
five
that.
On it. That was another one that people were sort of
Actually, it was I got Rye on it.
I got Rye in it.
Was
the name
of it. It was a malt liquor with Rye. And funny thing about that one is I put it on a beer engine. I was like, what better way to really mess this up than do that? So also the creativity plays on what I can put on the beer engine because if I can put a malt liquor that's a high ABV lager, even though the facts of a malt liquor are totally misconstrued. So I was like, well, all right, well, let's put it on a beer engine and really mess with this.
ignorant guy here. You're saying put it on a beer engine.
So a beer engine, you can see it over the bar. It's what the ESB comes out of. So instead pushing yeah. to a tap with CO2, we pull it.
It's kind of like a bellows in there. So you pull it.
We pull it. There's a little aerator on the end of the system that the beer goes through, and that's what creates the bubbles.
Okay.
And it makes the mouth.
And you can buy different size.
And is that one of the traditional English practices?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aside
from
all would be poured.
Banging aside from banging a tap into the side of a barrel sitting on a bar.
Yeah.
It's as traditional as you can get.
Yeah. Those,
those came into faction eventually. So.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
So you, one of the things that you guys are talking about is essentially taking a familiar style and riffing on it, tweaking it a little bit and playing with it, which is something composers have been also doing for their entirety of music.
And I've been
history.
Wanting to ask you actually about that. I mean, do you have thoughts on that? I like this.
Oh, I love
riffs
it.
On tradition is probably the theme of this episode now. I like that. So how do you think about that in your own composition?
Well, the kind of music I write is all over the map stylistically, but I generally tend to work from a model and then, if it were model railroading, we would call it kit bashing. You know, here's the model of a house. I'm going to now make it part of my layout in a particular kind of fashion. If it's, you know, a particular kind of pasta dish, you know, I can go completely traditional with a bolognese, but I can also tweak it a little bit, maybe adding, you know, a particular kind of cream to it, or maybe a little dash of Bailey's Irish cream and see what that's going to do to the red sauce.
Yeah.
And so in cooking and in brewing, I think you can do that as equally well as you will do it musically. This is a violin sonata that I'm writing, but instead of it being in three or four movements, it's one gargantuan single movement, maybe in nine parts. But they're not indivisible into separate movements.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that kind of thing happens all the time. I think really quite well.
Yeah. So I feel like let's do our first pairing here. So the way this works is we're going to, so there's two beers in front of us. I've been sipping on them this whole time and having a high old time over here. Yeah. But you guys will describe
a
little bit to us.
I have a plus one.
And
don't
then,
judge me.
I'm sorry?
I said I have a plus one. Don't judge me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
this is a really good IPA. Yeah. I'm not an IPA fan, and I like this beer.
That's good.
So why don't we do this one first then?
Okay.
Yeah.
So go ahead and tell us a little bit about this beer, and then Frank or I will dream up one of our guests is getting a phone call here. That's unless that's an alarm that you need to go do something with.
Dude, turn
beer,
your phone off.
So what we're gonna do is. So you guys will describe the beer a little bit. We'll drink it. We'll talk about it. Hopefully. People will be like, I need to go in and check out this beer and watch you work and be angry and throw things through the window.
I only try to do that before we open. Usually after we open, I kind of calm down.
Yeah. It's free of charge.
Yeah, it is free of charge.
And then we don't charge anybody for that. Frank and I are going to come up with a piece of music. We haven't planned any of this. We didn't even know what beers we were going to sip until we sat down and we'll come up with something. So, all right, we're starting with, I don't even know what this one is called.
This is called Hopsicle.
All right. Yeah.
Obviously, you could probably put a song in your head instantly with this, but you don't have to.
We're gonna go into the depths of the crazed classical music world. So
as you should, but it is a classical band, so
it is indeed.
Saying anyway, so Hopsicle is our double IPA. It's not the only double IPA we make, but it is one of the ones we make most often.
It's very good. I just went down the wrong hole there. So.
He drank it too fast. We know he was just too excited about it.
Real
we got
quick,
it.
Again, I'm not a beer guy like the rest of you. What do you mean by double IPA?
All right. So basically it's double the ABV, which means we have to double the hops a little bit as well.
Okay.
Because you want that balance.
So what
to
is the
remain.
ABV on this?
9.8
smaller glass.
Or is it 9%. Yeah. Okay. It might be right at 8.9, about 9%.
That's why I'm feeling so happy right now.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Or the fact that you're just drinking beer in general you're talking about music. Yeah, it's, you know, all things considered, that's a great thing to have. In life, right?
Except that's a whole different show on NPR.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Terry.
Anyways, I keep interrupting.
Yeah. Describe the beer.
So it's a double IPA. It's got a little bit of garlic and onion on the very back end. You do have to kind of hunt for it, but it is there. A trained palate will sense that. That comes from the Summit hops, and Citra is the other hop in this. There's only two hops. Well, three technically if you count the actual bittering addition I put in it with Warrior. The Citra hops obviously provide the tropical fruit, Citra, citrusy fruit, notes like the orange, grapefruit, a little bit of lime zest. Almost to the point where it's astringent but not quite. That malt brings you back, so it's kind of a nice, robust malt profile to it. We use muttons in almost all the beers that we make, and I'm slowly actually trying to tweak every recipe to have muttons, so we only have one vendor as much as possible for most of our malts anyway. So I'm working on that slowly but surely. Don't call me Shirley. sorry, I had to.
No, I'm proud of you.
Yeah. but this is just one of those... I mean, you can kind of sit back and drink a couple of these and, like you said, feel really happy.
Yeah, it's very warming.
You feel the warmth. It's warming. Right now, it's a perfect time of year for this beer. I plan on trying to squeak this out again in the spring, especially since we're turning 30 this year. It's kind of a big year to bring back a lot of the bigger beers that we've done in the past. And any plans I have for the future, if I can squeeze them in.
I'm not usually a big hop guy. Like, I rarely go into a craft brewery and order an IPA, but there is, maybe it's the higher ABV that I actually really like this.
Could be.
That it kind of masks some of the, to my palate, sometimes maybe bitterness or something that
yeah,
overly
so this
bitter
is,
from an IPA.
Yeah,
bitter.
So this is where the tradition of English comes in. And keeps
so it
things
sort of smooths
balanced
out that edge.
So everything's smooth, it's rounded, it makes you want to take that next sip. Even though this is a 9% beer, you still go, oh, I really enjoyed that sip.
It's drinkable.
Now I'm kind of thirsty again. How is this so drinkable?
Yeah.
It becomes dangerous, which is why we serve it in a 12-ounce glass.
Yes.
We have bartenders that obviously keep an eye on you.
So
that if you get a little too carried away, we might
cut
you off.
They're just looking for podcast hosts.
Yeah. It's like, get this out. He's cut off after one. So that's pretty much the flavor profile. It's where the flavors come from. You know, this is...
I can't taste the garlic. I've been trying to get it there.
It's a challenge.
Is it actual cloves that you...
No.
Or is it granulated?
It comes from the Summit hops.
Oh, it's the hops?
Summit is infamous. Summit is infamous for onion and garlic along with an herbal balance.
I haven't brewed much of Summit, so this makes me want to go grab some and just try now.
I will let everybody in on a little trade secret for myself. I hate both of these hops. I really do. I hate both of these hops and beers because typically they are used incorrectly. I try to keep all the flavors that I don't like out of it out of the way on purpose. But knowing that this has a fan base here, of course I'm going to brew it. It's not the only beer that I... The pumpkin ale is another example. I hate making pumpkin beers. I hate pumpkin beers. But I will brew it.
Because some of
the
beers weren't like... Hopsicle was originally Kevin Mataluzzi.
Yeah. And,
who
you know, it's...
owns 20 Tap.
It's a fine recipe. I just kind of tweaked it so that I made sure I knew I wouldn't get those flavors. Almost out of the gate with that beer. Yeah. I tweaked it day one. I looked at it and I was like, well, this looks like it has potential. I know that these hops can be used correctly, and this is how I would do it, so I went with it.
I could have told you people would like it.
Regardless, I want to like it too. So I'm a firm believer in
absolutely.
I want to drink
like
my
own beer.
Beer
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, I have a suggestion for a pairing.
Okay. Okay.
It's a spicy beer, but it's balanced.
Okay.
And so this brings to mind... It's got to be an Eastern or Central European composer, so I'm going to lay Bartok out on the line.
Right. Okay.
And then say, where do we go from there?
Oh, no.
I'm thinking.
It's not spicy enough for a Penderecki. It's not crazy enough for Lutoslavsky.
Okay.
So I think the balance really, when people get to the Central European composers, Bartok is a good one that spans both the aficionati with the lay people.
Hungarian part?
Yeah.
Hence the backside of the
there you go. Hop, it's like goulash.
String quartet.
Sure, which one?
I love goulash. Damn it, I really want that.
We can keep it passing back and forth.
Billy, we should make that a special on the side there while these guys are trying to figure this out.
Yeah. Also, goulash that we serve with our popsicle.
So whatever we pick, you guys have to play it. We agree on that, right? You have to change the sound.
If you guys pick it every time I brew the beer, that will be on the playlist.
So I'm thinking either 3, 4, or 5.
I was actually thinking 3.
We've just not.
But I was trying to think of a movement.
Last movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spicy, but still accessible.
Of 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's do that. All right. So what we're going
to
do
We have to now clink.
Oh, yeah. We're going to clink. Yeah, all right. We just... So I think this is a really interesting choice, Frank. Look at the fourth movement here of Bartok String Quartet number 3. There's some really amazing stuff. You guys were talking while we were listening to this. I'm just going to hand it back over to you. So what were you saying about Bartok, Frank?
I said I think that in general Bartok is a good choice for this kind of thing, but I think that these 3 string quartets that we narrowed it down to initially before coming to this one, so the 3rd string quartet, the 4th string quartet, and the 5th string quartet, all have a kind of rambunctious energy to them, even though it's still something that, you know, a non-music professional can listen to and still love and appreciate it. It's got this kind of pop and wow and zowiness to it that when you listen to it, you just go, oh, this is very similar to what happens in my mouth with this beer.
Yeah,
you know, you've got the spice, you've got the floral, it gets back up into your nose, but yet it's still got something there that, as you were saying earlier, it's a beer you want to drink, and you just had a sip, and you want to have another sip.
Yeah.
And Bartok, for these quartets, really does that for me.
Yeah.
But then you were saying, and I thought this was brilliant, that you said that music evokes a particular kind of memory, as does taste.
Right, so... I mean, originally with this beer, obviously, we have a couple of regulars that come in here and like to sing Hopsicle in the queue of Queen, which I find very fascinating. And so now I always, unfortunately, associate this beer with that.
No.
Not that I necessarily pull Queen out when I make this beer, but, you know, it is one of those... beers that just kind of, when it travels across your palate, you're just like, there's this. Wait, what was that last thing? What was that last note? Like, I really want to hear it.
And it isn't, see, the band Queen is interesting you mentioned them, because they are definitely, there's a depth and a complexity that they pulled a lot from classical music into their popular music writing, which is why it stood the test of time. Really.
And for us, this is one of our classical beers that we like to do. I mean, I'm not the first brewer to brew this, but I do try to carry on traditions here.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. I really do like this beer, and like I probably said while we were down, these aren't my favorite hops, but... You know, I try to make it drinkable for my palate because I want to drink it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make a beer that I don't want to drink and then expect everybody else to drink because it's just wrong. And I assume that most people don't want to make music for the same reason, you know, within that same vein. Now, they want to push the envelope, which we try to do. And this is one of those beers that made me think, oh, well, if we're doing this, like, we could do... A multitude of things. But how do we do that? So normally if I get too crazy, I just start quieting my mind, turn off the music, which I know, I don't know if as a composer you do.
You know, you actually have to do that. You have to have moments of silence so you can actually listen to what's going on in here rather than
Making beer can very much, like coming up with a new recipe especially, can be very much the same, you know, nature of things. Now, obviously, these two are not my recipe, but did I tweak them?
No.
Not sure.
Yeah.
But for the right reason, for the right cause, it's to keep on the tradition. It's to keep the beers cleaner. It's to get them more consistent.
Yeah.
And that was always my goal when I got here.
Yeah.
Was to get the beers to a consistent level. And if that fell off, I needed to know why. And so there's a lot of give and take.
The whole tweaking part of it that you were talking about is also something that anybody in the creative arts does, which is I've done it once this way. I'm now going to revise it because I see that there are things that I can fix, there are things that I can improve.
Absolutely.
And you get another performance and it's like, all right, those things now work. Can I do this? And if the piece really resonates with you, or is very personal, or you really think it's a good piece and you want to keep offering it, you try and perfect it, and you keep making it work. So you do this, you adjust the dynamic level here, you adjust this, and that happens all the way through the life of a piece until the composer dies.
And not only just a piece,
then
but
conductors do it.
Yeah,
but sometimes multiple pieces too. At least in the beer world, you know, when you get a process down, and it can be applicable to many beers. Or all the beers. That's great. One of the things I worked on here was water, because that became one of those things I noticed was a little shaky when I got here. And I kind of just like let it roll with it, and then I went back and got feedback from competitions, because that became very important to me. While I didn't always like the voices and sometimes disagreed with them, they, in the end, were probably right. And lo and behold, because of the things that I've changed, we've gotten higher scores, better judge reports. All those things have come into play because I was willing to listen to the critique.
Yeah, you have to,
And while that's a struggle, and I know that we do well here, I don't want the beer to be a reason why we fail ever. At all. So not only this, but the symphony doesn't end with me. It ends with my bartenders. Those pouring the beer.
They have to like it too.
And they have to like it. They have to, and they let me know.
And they just,
and sometimes I look at them, I'm like, yeah, but do you just not like that flavor in general? Or, and there are times like I know how to combat what's going on, you know, with the feedback versus just giving into it and going, okay, I'll never make that beer again. All right, well, you don't like it because. You don't like these flavors.
Well,
the actual Groot that I made classic with Yarrow and Mugwort, that's a classic example.
Yes.
The amount of feedback I got off of that, I had to tell the bartender, I'm like, you can't ever write those things on the whiteboard again. Please don't. That influences everybody else around you. And while you're getting all the feedback, I don't need that in, you know, this. But if you have that feedback,
let people like it.
Please, just let them be the judges. You don't have to influence any of that. So there is a little bit of like nuance to what I do here. It's not just I do everything back there. I also kind of creep up here in the sense that, hey, this is this is how this beer should be presented. Mm-hmm. I try to write the descriptions as such, but yeah. I'm also here to answer questions, to deal with problems that they have with the beers. If something's pouring poorly, which right now we have about four of them being feisty right now. This one was one of them, the Hopsicle. But I've dialed it back a little bit, so that was actually probably inappropriate.
the interesting thing that you probably also bring up with this is something that very much concerns Nick's field of study, musicology, which is this: how does your audience receive it?
Right.
And what kind of feedback did they give you? Now, you and I are both alive. And so we're in a queer kind of position that we are actually going to hear what they have to say. Whereas Bartok is dead, and anything we say about bad about Bartok, Bartok's like, who cares? I'm done. So this whole notion of how your audience receives your work is something you and I have to actually listen to and either accept or ignore as we go.
So that's interesting, because obviously we're in the age of the internet. Anybody can say anything about anything.
Whatever they like.
Whatever they like, whatever they don't like. They can say it. The thing about that is I don't pay attention to online reviews. And here's why. If I do that, I fall into this trap of, oh, no, I'm not doing it right. Now, who I do listen to is my immediate audience across the bar. So when I say I don't just stay behind the I come out here and I talk to people. Hey, what do you think of this? Now, sure, maybe because they're face to face with me, they're not going to be quite as honest. But maybe I can get a little more out of them in their review of what they're drinking. And what I mean by that is, it tastes like a horse sock. Okay, well, first off, horses don't wear socks, so how do you know this? Secondly, it becomes this thing of, you know, and every brewer deals with this. Like, I'm not the only one that has to do it. But that's why I kind of just stay away. Every once in a while, I'll go on it for the humor aspect of it, more than anything else. And I'm not saying that every review is humorous, but there are a couple occasional ones where you're just like, really? Where did you come up with this?
I know.
How do you know what that even tastes like, smells like, presents itself like? So, you know, and it's, I think beer's a little different in music in that sense, because there's, you know, a vein of flavor profiles that people come into that don't necessarily make sense, but you try your best to kind of decipher what they really mean. And I think music falls in the same vein of that, but everybody's going to have a preference when it comes to music, regardless of...
People know what they like. That's not necessarily means that something is good or bad.
Right.
Yep.
Well, which, you know, when when someone's online saying they didn't enjoy their sandwich, it's like, well, it didn't appeal to you, not it's bad.
Right.
So you have to... but people, like you say, they'll write whatever they like because only their opinion matters. But, you know... you roll with that. We've been going, we're now in our 30th year, so, you know, we've done something right, you know? We're in a tough business, and we've lasted, so, you know. And we feel like led the way in terms of at least beer. And also in kind of the way the a brew pub is set up. I mean, if you look at a lot of, certainly the brew pubs that opened in the 90s and maybe early 2000s, they all kind of tend to look a little like the brew pub, because they came here first and they said, well, what is John doing right? And then they went and kind of did their own version, but they do tend to have a lot of similarities with the brew pub. So we, you know,
I agree.
Feel like they did.
You guys were leaders. And,
led the way,
You know, because of the way that the craft brew in Central Indiana got its start and how it radiated out from this, you guys are certainly to be enshrined on the root of the tree portion.
And they all recognize it too. I mean, Dave and at the Sun King,
Dave and Clay.
Clay. I was going to
say
Jay.
I did my last episode with them, actually.
Yeah, I think.
I know them both, so I should remember his name. But he, they were, even as big as they are and as successful as they've gotten in a relatively short time, you know, they know that they owe a lot to John Hill, and that he kind of, you know.
Well, I think many brewers, not even locally, I think across the state, they understand where they came from. I think a lot of breweries could say that, you know, eventually they would have made it, but, you know, where did that courage come from?
Yes.
And that's the key.
Who knew it would work? Who knew Hoosiers would like craft beer? Nobody
and,
did.
You know, it's funny watching all these other breweries now that have, you know, started to gain some age on them and watch the scene around them grow and what they're doing and what their struggles are, because we've been doing it for, I mean, almost since I've been here, if not sooner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Trying to struggle with new breweries popping up left and right.
Yeah.
And how do we,
how
do we stay relevant, and how do we, you know, how do we keep ourselves sustainable?
Yeah.
From,
well, there,
from
and
that,
there's so. Probably 12 different shows that you could put into this as to, you know, how do you stay current? How do you stay relevant, et cetera, when everything changes around you, especially in the internet age, every 3 years?
Yeah.
We as composers do the same thing. I chose to be multilingual as a composer and compose in different styles for every single piece because I didn't want to ever just only be stuck in the mid-2010s as that is Felice style.
Yeah.
And plus, it's what I want to do. And at the end of the day, I think you have to make a beer that makes you happy first before you can give it to somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and do our second pairing here, because I've drank half of it, but I've still got a little bit of beer left that I'm wanting to finish
here. I've drank none of it, which is a shame.
This is a shame. Well,
I did bring an extra beer to the table.
This is a great classic beer. It is such a good example of an ESB.
So to tell us a little bit about this beer that we're sipping here, and then we'll do our second pairing.
All right. So as mentioned before, it's based off the Fuller's recipe. It's as English as we can get it.
What's this one called again?
ESB. That's it.
Okay.
Just the ESB. Extra special bitter.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Extra special bitter. Bitter is misconceived because typically bitter meant that's how you would order it.
Mm-hmm.
You would go into Northern England and order it as a bitter. Mm-hmm. If you were down in the Southern part, you would order it as a pint. And this would be always the beer that you would get.
The best bitter was the house beer.
Yeah, the house beer. And this is always... similar across the board.
Yeah.
It's malty. It's got a little bit of hops. It uses English malt, English hops, English yeast. We do the same thing here. The only thing I claim to fame is the only thing we don't have going for us is the Fuller's water.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can't. Yeah. I could reproduce that but the only way I could do it is with
water.
Well, no, the only way I could do it is with an RO system, strip it back all the way down to zero.
Okay.
But I don't like using those because they're very wasteful systems. It wastes about 90% of the water that you actually get, and I don't like doing that because I am also the sustainability leader of the guild.
Yeah.
So I have that twofold. Now back to the beer. Like I said, it's the perfect porridge for a beer. Mm-hmm. It's not too hoppy, not too malty. It kind of has this tea-like profile from the Fuggle hops. It's that herbal hop. The malt kind of just backs up that sweetness that you get from tea. So that's kind of where it is. There's a little bit of maybe lemon zest from it, but it really just... it's complex, but it's not complex, I guess, is the gist I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's,
And the thing about it is...
good, solid beer.
Yeah, it's just... it's and on the beer engine, look at this head. Like, it's... you see my glass. I haven't touched it until now.
It's
head has not moved. That head has barely moved. And that's...
the lacing.
And the lacing and everything else. And the thing about it is that's also provided by the beer engine and the cask conditioning. So of all the beers, I do try to capture any of that natural CO2. This one especially gets it. Because if I don't have to touch it with CO2 to even charge it a little bit, I prefer that route.
Yes.
It does this.
It should be natural.
As natural as I can get it, I try to keep it there. Obviously, I have modern technology at my side, so I can use that. But I try not to use it as much as possible.
The thing that the home brewer has the hardest thing to try and do is come out with a good beer head. That's going to be that kind of natural. Even if they cask condition it and do it in a keg, having this happen is tricky.
So. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we thinking, Frank? An English composer here?
It's
or?
So traditionally wonderful and perfect. I would go very much with an English composer. Mm-hmm. The big question is which one.
Yeah. I was thinking, my initial thought was Benjamin Britten, but I don't know if that's traditional enough.
You know, the thing is it would still work. I would be perfectly happy with Elgar, Walton, or Holst.
Ah, okay.
So,
do you have a piece in mind, maybe by Elgar?
You know, because it is so traditional, I think we maybe have to say Enigma.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. All right. I think that's a great choice. So let's give it a listen.
I approve of that.
Clinking.
Yeah. We can clink, but I don't know if I approve yet.
Frank says Enigma very easy.
Okay.
All right.
Cheers. Thank you.
For our second pairing here, we've chose this Elgar piece. I think it's fantastic. Frank, what were you saying about it?
The Enigma Variations has all the Britishness you could ever want in a piece. Mm-hmm. It has the British stiff upper lip and the pomp and circumstance, mm-hmm. all puns intended with that, as well as all the great, wonderful color the British composers, especially from the late 1800s into the 1950s, mm-hmm. put into their music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like I'm pulling this from the beer engine right now when I listen to that, so it's perfect.
So you agreed with this pairing? You like?
I agree with the pairing. Not only that, but think about the way it travels across your palate. This is the very same thing. You've got that little bit of bitterness that mm-hmm. he speaks of, the stiff upper lip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then whatever pun he intended. I'm not going to try to repeat that because I am not smart right now.
It has everything to do with the pomp and circumstance marches that we all graduated to.
Which is the malt. That malt. Yeah, the malt comes across your palate on that.
When you got your diploma at college.
Which the British all call that tune.
Oh, yeah, I did. Did I pay attention to that?
I didn't, you did.
We're a little bit like a Robert Altman film now. We're all talking over the top of each other.
Yeah, that's That happens fairly often at this show, actually, by the end,
Yes.
And I'm going to go ahead and repeat what I said. Yeah. I'm kind of sad that nobody chose John Williams as a composer today, but I understand.
Yes. Yeah.
The reason why...
There's so much great stuff, though.
There is, and it's insane, but also let's not choose any of the Harry Potter movies, because basically it's everything he did in one movie.
Except, you know, the music that he uses in the night bus scene is that crazy, weird... jazz thing that he every now and then throws out.
That is very ESB. I was thinking, I didn't know how this was going to play out when we showed up. You guys are obviously looking for classical music, not just any music, which that's awesome.
You almost said, that's fine. But,
no, it's actually awesome because... You look at me and you're like, oh, that guy just listens to weird stuff.
Syncopated.
All right,
music.
If you want me to add something that comes in from a little bit more popular vein, here's where I will stick the Frank Felice progressive rock musician hat on.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I will say that this ESB is a perfect Jerusalem from Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Brain Salad Surgery album.
There you go.
Nice. I was going to go more of a Herbie Hancock jazz fusion. Because
Which by Hancock?
Yeah.
No, anything.
Anything? Okay.
I don't care. No. Just okay. I'm thinking
My background is actually jazz. Not
so, so I'm going to be honest. I'm not a huge music connoisseur of the vein of I know everybody and anybody. I'm not going to ever speak to that. I do have certain genres that I do like and listen to, especially when I brew. Billy often comes out and goes, "You got to turn that down."
And sometimes it's a little
sorry.
It's competing with the Pandora.
And I'm like, "Well, can you just turn yours up?" And he just looks at me like,
really? "Yeah,
fine." But here's the thing: like when I make beer, I listen to music. It's not out of the control. Do I listen to classical music? I think there's occasional.
Yes. Yeah, you do sometimes.
Oddly enough, if I was brewing beer today, it would have been full on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because of the day.
Yeah. I'm so looking forward to the soundtrack for this. Force Awakens came out.
This episode won't air.
When I heard that soundtrack, I went out and bought it the next day.
Yeah,
and then I got caught speeding that day because I was turned up.
Were you in Hamilton County?
Hamilton, Montana.
Yeah, well, there you go. Same thing. Yeah, there you go. Must be the Hamiltons.
So as we look ahead, we got just a few more minutes here.
Sure.
Where do you think, this is a very broad question, where's craft beer heading?
That is a loaded question, actually, not a broad question. But I will try to answer it to the best of my vein.
And then I'm going to be asking about composition
of questions.
Minute, so you can think.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Sorry.
That's fine.
So I'll take this for Billy because I don't know if he really keeps up to date on what is going on in craft industry. Obviously, like I said, we made a hard seltzer.
Yes.
There is a big fight for not only brand to brand of craft beer, there is a big fight for everything else going on around us. It's the hard seltzers. It's the wine industry trying to be creative and playful. Let's look at all the fruit lines that are out there.
Yeah.
While there were some out there, but they were not as plentiful as they are now. Let's look at all the fruit-infused whiskeys. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking vodka. I'm talking whiskey, bourbon. Yeah. Things that were supposed to be untouched are now touched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not coming from, you know, the craft distillers of the world.
So is this all coming from a place of creativity is finally being unleashed, or is it coming from just a reality of business?
I think it's a dystopian. No, I think it's a dystopian of people trying to catch up with the current trends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Throw it against the wall, see what sticks.
Okay.
A lot of what's happened in the craft beer industry, think about what's happened there. You got the fruit beers, you got the crazy pastry stouts, you've got the hazy IPAs, the milkshake stouts, everything. You know, you got all these things. And that's fine because people want it. They want to drink it. They want it. They have it. However, when you talk about distilled spirits like vodka and everything else, vodka is just vodka.
Yeah.
Look at what the craft distillers are doing. Look at Tito's.
Yeah.
They basically just made vodka and put it out there, and they make good vodka.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, now you've got these craft distillers that are doing just what we do. We just try to stick to our guns and make it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We make what we want to make.
Yeah.
And we don't listen to the trends.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a fine balance of how all that plays out. And then you've got people and the way they drink and the way they act around alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is people are looking for lower ABV. They're looking for things that are more flavorful, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hence, the hard seltzers came out.
Yeah.
Hence,
yeah.
the reason why White Claw is basically the number one selling brand out there of anything.
Yeah, and that all happened recently, like in the last 2 years or something.
Last year. Just last year.
Yeah.
Watched it slowly ramp. And at the beginning of the year, I watched that, and I saw the first quarter reports, and I was like, that's when I decided to make our hard seltzer.
Okay,
I was like, well, I got to figure out how to get this into the system and do it right. And so I started researching.
Yeah.
Now what my lapse is I'm a small brewer.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of other small brewers doing it. I did all the research I could, and then I asked the one brewer I knew had already done it.
Yeah.
And I went from there.
Yeah.
And
The thing that's really great about all the stuff at the craft brewing industry, it all started small, like here. And it all became something that everybody wanted to chase the flavors and chase the whole panoply of style, as opposed to just trying to do a branding or you know, a selling of that kind of thing. And I love the fact that so much of America embraced that. They said, we just don't want American Pilsner, we want lots of other things, and we want a choice. And that was great.
Well, and I think IPA or pale ale was one of those first beers that just kind of grasped the audience in that sense. And because hops offer so many
hops,
well, there's, it's not only really the addictiveness, it's just the flavor nuances that you can get from it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm kind of sad I didn't choose to do the single hop profile that we had.
That's all right. People can come in and try it.
But they can come and try it. We have a Lonely Hop series that I've been doing for about 3 years now, named as such, where we do just one hop. It's a malt base that I choose. It's not a single malt base, but it's multiple malt base. So, and then it's whatever hop.
Yeah.
Right now it's Green Bullet. And it's
from New Zealand, right?
It's from New Zealand. It's out of this world. Personally,
and,
I think.
And he'll be doing Summit next.
Okay.
Actually, I probably should. Just so you really understand it.
Just to prove to everybody that he should.
It's not like I don't have a plethora of hops back there to use.
Frank, same question for you. So we're thinking about how the craft beer industry and the party's starting to grow a little behind us here, but I think people can still hear us. But,
yes.
Where do you think composition's heading? How is it going to respond to changing demands of audience and artists?
We're in a period and have been for about 25 years where eclecticism really has reigned, where you can do anything you want to and people will take you seriously and they will listen. I think we're in a cusp of change, and where that's going to land, I'm not entirely certain.
Mm-hmm.
So from a contemporary classical side, we're really in a place where pop music has really infused classical music to the point where composers are wanting to do music for smaller ensembles and take them on tour like rock bands.
Yeah. Okay.
And there is a kind of hip-hopization of mm-hmm. the world to the point where Kendrick Lamar won the Pulitzer Prize yeah. for music, although he didn't write any of the music on the album that he won the Pulitzer for.
Look, he's the face, man.
But like, no, yeah. and see, that's part of the change is yeah. what I think a lot of not only musicians are doing is they're starting to say, all right, the four of us sat down at this table, and while I may have come up with the beats and you came up with the main central riff for the song, mm-hmm. you know, he might have come up with the words and then yeah. he actually delivered them. Nick did. Mm-hmm. And Nick gets the $10,000 Pulitzer Prize.
He is
trans
fancier than all of us put together.
That's exactly right.
Piece, yeah.
But see, and for everybody involved, that would be perfectly okay.
Right.
And so
yeah.
I think we're in a place where this kind of notion of one composer as yeah. the person who is really in charge of everything is really kind of going away.
Okay.
But because of the way this changes every 5 minutes, I'm willing to bet that 5 years from now, all of a sudden, magnum opi are going to become the thing again okay. because we're okay. going back and we're always constantly cycling through things.
So. Okay. Probably not so quick question, but maybe a quick question because you kind of iterated on it already. And I have two. One is, do you feel there's a pushback in the composing world to stick to the traditional guns that you may have learned when you went to school versus what, say, an 18-year-old now is going up through in college and wanting mm-hmm. to be a composer.
Those crazy kids and their music.
Yeah, you know,
so,
yes.
Yeah. but I'm that's kind of what I'm kind of getting at because like I find myself now in the age of brewing and while I'm so young at it, like I do teach others, but that doesn't mean I don't learn from others either.
Mm-hmm. That's
so,
exactly right.
So. Yeah. My question is, do you find that there's a, because like in the craft beer world, there's a quick divide in new styles. And like I said, I'm never going to brew a hazy IPA, not on purpose anyway. And if it is, it's going to be our house IPA. Mm-hmm. It's just going to happen because we don't filter anything. But that said, do you feel that that is a thing with music as well? Not just as a composer, but in general, like, let's look at all the holy crap, like, that's music moments.
Yeah, no, it happens. It happens every generation.
Okay.
And it, you can go back through all of music history and see that there is a reaction to the previous generation mm-hmm. that they really want to push that aside and mm-hmm. make room for them, their new generation that's mm-hmm. coming up.
Yeah.
And there is a pushback from maybe older teachers that say, you are really not respecting what we fought so hard to achieve,
yeah.
you just want to throw it all away.
Right.
And so there is a little bit of that gap. But I think that there are certainly folks from my generation, and I'm 58, that are looking forward into the future and saying, yes, there is this sea change that we see happening. Mm-hmm. We're going to try and embrace the parts of it that we think that we can and still also try and keep whatever kinds of levels of craft and how mm-hmm. we do things
yeah.
going and also pass that on as well. And from a professor point of view, that's exactly what I try to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm ever going to be a hip hop artist. and part of that has to do with, I like odd time signatures. I don't want to do mm-hmm. everything in 4/4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's me.
Well, not
and
all hip hop is 4/4 either.
Actually, it is.
Well,
to an extent. And I know that you studied yeah. probably way more than me, but I do listen to a ton of hip hop. So yeah.
I like Black Violin, which is hip hop and odd time signatures.
Yeah, yeah it is.
Well, I was going to say that Stravinsky scared people.
So now that we
sorry to cut in here.
Sorry that we started a fight all of a sudden.
No, and I would love okay. to have this hip hop conversation. Yeah, but that's a different podcast. So maybe yeah. we'll segue into that. Yeah. But we need to end this one right
yes.
now because we are at the end of our time.
All right.
But then we can have this hip hop conversation. Yeah. It would be fantastic.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, that would be
thank
great.
Thank you so
much
for
hosting. I will
us.
Definitely
yes.
study
cheers.
Up on that every day in the brewery. So, cheers, guys.
If you haven't been to the Broad Ripple Brew Pub, please do come by. It's a beautiful room. It's got a beautiful ceiling. You can watch that make the beers in the background. They have fantastic. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about your food at all, but there's a fantastic, menu of some traditional English food and then some far more exciting things. Got a nice porch in the summer. It's really a great.
You have to mention the vegan side of things and the vegetarian side of things. So.
I was unaware of those things.
But that's great. Yes.
Oh, thank you. I agree with that because as a meat eater, I do enjoy that one too.
Me too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Please also check out the music of Frank Felice, our music guest today. We'll have links for all of this that you can follow online. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for hosting. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah. Cheers, I feel like everybody. We need to clink glasses one more time.
Oh, do one more time.
One more time. All with somewhat different beers. Cheers. Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Once again, I'm Nick Johnson, and I'd like to thank you for joining us on Classical Pairings. If you're enjoying this podcast, never miss a future episode by subscribing to Classical Pairings on your favorite podcast platform. You can download bonus pairings at classicalmusicindie.org. Just click Listen, Podcasts, and then Classical Pairings. Classical Pairings is a production of Classical Music Indie, a listener-supported producer of classical music radio syndication, streaming, podcasts, and Note Magazine. Learn more at classicalmusicindie.org. Our producer for Classical Pairings is Ezra Baker Truppiano, and our sound engineer is Gabriel Harley. Our theme music was composed by Frank Felice. Cheers, and see you next time.